You better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining out the door.
Come over here, kid. Why, sir? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil, and you fry some garlic. And you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. And you gotta do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. And a little bit of wine. And a little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Welcome to Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour. I'm not entirely sure. Yeah, I guess I'm on the air for a minute. It didn't sound like it, but there I am. Hi, how are you? It's Michelle Anna Jordan. Another cold weekend. I hope you were able to get to farmers markets anyway. I went. I didn't spend a real long time today, but I certainly went to two this week. What did we do last? Oh, last week we talked about granola. I had so much fun with those women from Not Your Mamas. I think they're just great, very entertaining. Tonight we're taking a shift and we're going into the world of academia to my alma mater, Sonoma State University. I have my pal, Ray Johnson. You have a long list of credits, Ray. You've run the Chronicle North Coast Wine Tasting for a long time. You also wrote that fine book, and I can see the cover in my head, and I forget the name.
Yes, The Good Life Guide to Enjoying
Wine.
That's
right, The Good Life Guide to Enjoying Wine. And you're very involved. You are the director, in fact, of the Wine Business Institute, which is part of the School of Business and Economics.
Exactly.
Sonoma State, housed in Stevenson Hall.
Yes.
So lots going on. And you've got something I know coming up later this week.
Oh, yes. We have so many new programs launching. It's really an exciting time for us.
So tell us, let's start at the beginning with when this began, when you founded when the Institute was founded, who attends, what happens, that sort of thing.
Yes, it kicked off about 15 years ago. The industry and the school came together, and the industry was very interested in providing education for the next generation of people who would take over the leadership roles in the wine business side of the wine industry. And people like Gary Heck, he was there at the very beginning.
Oh, okay. And Gary Heck of Korbel.
Exactly. So of Korbel and Heck Estates, Alan Hemphill. A number of industry leaders, they came together. Walt Klenz was involved at the time. He was working with Behringer. And they said, you know, we need to look at what we do for the next generation. How do we provide the base? Because our sons, our daughters, and our colleagues' friends and families are going to be taking over. So what do we do to educate them in terms of wine business and continuing the success that the wine industry established here in the North Coast?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what kicked it off. And over the years, we've seen a development of three platforms of programs. There's a master's degree for people who would like to get what we call the wine MBA. It's the only one of its kind in the United States. So literally, if you want to study wine business at the master's degree level, you've got to come to California and specifically the North Coast.
Cool.
And then we also have a bachelor's degree for business students who want to concentrate in wine business.
Okay.
And that's where their specialization is. And then lastly, we offer a big menu of classes for the industry for professionals who can't get in here for a full master's or bachelor's program but want a short tune-up on certain topics. And we do some longer sessions but also some very short four-hour sessions as well.
So that's the sort of thing where you don't have to actually apply to become a university student. You So is it part of Extended Ed?
That's right. Part of it? So the School of Extended Ed partners with us to deliver these classes, really for people who are working in the industry and can't get in and be here, you know, on campus every day.
How big is your faculty?
So there are 8 people teaching in wine business, and they also teach with the general business classes, but their specific interest is wine. And you see the papers that they publish not only in the trade journals for the industry, but also in the academic journals really focus on the business of wine.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably the side that people think, the general public, they don't think about all that goes into, you know, getting that bottle of wine in the market where they buy it.
That's right.
You know, the romance is about the grapes and the crush and making it. So what is a master's degree, or even maybe we should start at the bachelor's degree? What does that look, what is an emphasis? What do you study?
I think Roy Cicchetti, he's one of our board members, part of the Sebastiani family with the Cicchetti Wine Company. And he said to us, you know, I still use the financial models that I learned in my finance classes when I was back at Sonoma State earning my MBA. Mm-hmm. So you have a base of rigorous instruction in math. So people have quantitative skills so they can make informed decisions down the road. Mm-hmm. Of course, marketing, how they bring products to market and get it to the consumers that really want to drink their wines. Of course, the legal elements, HR, and probably the big strategy, that's where it all starts, right? And people need to define a great strategy. And so taking courses in strategic management to really develop a long-term vision for where a company is going to go, that's really vital.
Mm-hmm. Tell us some more about strategic management. I can sort of spin off in my head a couple of possible directions that might go, but being sort of the opposite of business-minded. That's just how I work in a totally different realm. How do you plan that? I mean, do you think about all of the little things that are the little elements of what your tasting room might be like, sort of the fun side of things? Is that incorporated in a strategic management plan?
Well, it is. And you start out really with your vision. So where do you want to take the company?
You know, what do you want it to be?
What do you want it to be when it grows up, so to speak, you know, 10 years down the road and longer? And then what sort of mission are you going to live through that? And what are your core values so the business is in sync with you? Because you see how sometimes businesses limp if you have one set of values, but the business is trying to do something else. Mm-hmm. And then really crafting objectives that fall from all of that, that flow through that, so that all the objectives line up with those ultimate goals. And then it's going to come down to very specific things, like you mentioned, like what should the tasting room be like? And is the label going to match up with the experience they have in the tasting room, right? You know, you go and look at some wine labels, they're really fun and wacky, and it appeals in a certain way to certain target consumers. But if you went in a tasting room then that was you know, very formal, it wouldn't match that, would it?
Exactly.
Right. So that all has to come together. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it doesn't flow and it creates dissonance in people's minds.
Sure. So the professors are business professors with an interest and expertise in wine. Do you get the wine community itself actively involved? Like, do the classes have speakers, all that sort of thing?
Oh, you bet. So we have a cohort of people from the Bordeaux School of Management spending 2 weeks studying with us right now. So, for example, some of the people that have come in, Pete Scott from Vincraft, Mario Zapponi, who works with a number of wineries here across the North Coast in mergers and acquisitions. They came in to speak to a couple of our classes. Lou Perdue, who does the news fetch every day for the wine industry, a famous journalist, he was in to talk about journalism and the new media and all the evolutions that have occurred. Jim Bielenberg, who's been a CFO with a number of wineries in the North Coast, he's been in. And then Tim Hanai, who teaches our online wine business management course. Great guy. And he was in to help them see the beginning of a financial model. And then also see the starting to see more of, I think, in the wine industry is this recognition that sweet wine really has an important place for consumers. And he talked about that and how there's been this shift. And you look at how Moscato has really gone through the roof. And it's bringing in consumers who may not have been drinking wine before. And that's a good thing for everybody's fortunes.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That one took me by surprise. Two things I'm curious about. Well, lots of things I'm curious about. But you mentioned new media. And that's something, the incorporation of new media, by which we're talking, you know, internet, social media. So what's happening? How is that being, is that it being incorporated?
Yeah, I think what wineries are they're working with an evolution that's occurring where in the past we had a small number of gatekeepers who controlled the message,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And, you know, you had the power of the wine writers and especially those who had the biggest audiences, whether it be from the major publications or other reviewers in smaller regional areas, right? Mm-hmm. But now what we're seeing is the evolution where we have lots of people influencing the conversation, sometimes with very small groups, mm-hmm. but very closely connected to that group, such as you know, some of the people who blog, some of the people who write in a smaller venue, some of the people who own retail shops in communities
sure.
where what they say really makes a difference.
Yeah,
in
that
the lines
one,
that
I can. That one makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
Because I like that personal contact.
Yes.
I think that's really, really important. And I actually think we've just lost, you know, a major voice in that area. I mean, if I needed a wine for something and it wasn't in my own lexicon, I just went up to Traversa's.
I know.
I mean, my whole drinking life has been, you know, really shaped to a very large degree by three generations of Traversa's.
Yes.
And I think that personal connection is important. And I know that in many ways it's shifting in some degree to social media. Now, some people, including Michael Traverso, you know, Michael Traverso is doing great with social media. And
yes.
I actually hold out hope that they're going to reemerge.
And, you know, it was great. Michael came down to speak to the Bordeaux cohort as well to talk about what it's like to introduce your wine into a retail store and how you work with the retailers mm-hmm. to, you know, get on their good side and really do the best job possible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I miss them, too.
Yeah, but hasn't been very long, and I really do hold out a lot of hope that they'll be back. We're going to take a little musical interlude and come back with another thing I'm really curious about.
Bit kinder. Well, I guess casino. Trouble's on my mind. Yes, I guess he knows it ain't in the wine.
It's Mouthful here on KRCB. My guest, Ray Johnson, director of the Wine Business Institute, a part of the School of Business and Economics at Sonoma State University. A great resource. One thing I'm curious about, because it's another new element, next week I'm going to have, I hope, representatives from three wineries on Mouthful who are talking about their new electric charging stations. And I'm just wondering if you've heard, if there's anything of looking in that direction, not just the new media to entice customers for different wines and broaden the base, but also visitors. It's like, hey, we got an electric car. Now we got three wineries we can go to. You know,
that's really neat.
Yeah, I found it fascinating.
Well, I think all wineries are finding a way to, you know, decrease their environmental footprint, become more sustainable. It's not, as you see in some industries, greenwashing. People are very passionate in the wine business because it's food, right? It's a food and beverage, and it's part of a lifestyle. Yes. So people really want to find a way to do things right. So I think that's part and parcel of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we were off the air, you were mentioning Benziger and what they've done. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, it is.
From a sustainability standpoint. They've mm-hmm. taken it to the nth degree with their biodynamic programs.
Right,
and
yeah,
it's really
have.
Amazing.
Yeah, and they're one of the wineries that has charging stations now.
Very cool.
As does Coppola. And Coppola has certainly done something interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've been up there.
I haven't yet, no.
Need to go.
Yeah.
But wait until they open the pools.
Yes, I'll wait for the warm weather.
Yeah. I find it really fascinating what they've done. And some people are saying, oh, bringing Hollywood up to, you know, it's like, well, first of all, Coppola's never been about Hollywood, you know. It reminds me of what this place used to be, even 100 years ago. People used to come up, you know, by horse and carriage, by train, by all that sort of thing to take the waters.
That's right.
Russian River, you know, from Rionito to Monterio were family resorts.
Mm-hmm.
Calistoga, Knights Valley, it was all family resorts, and water was very important. Listening to music, dancing, all of that was very important. And Coppola has brought all that, plus a restaurant. I think it's a very interesting arrangement that he has up there.
I agree with you. If you think back in, you know, history helps give us perspective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were talking about liberal arts education.
Right,
it was a good
yes.
foundation, right? So you think about the history here. Asti used to be an amazing tourist destination,
yes.
right? Wasn't it like the second busiest place after Disneyland in California?
Oh, now that I don't know.
Yeah.
But I know it was very much a destination for tourists.
And so,
now, I don't know that much about what was going on there.
So the famous winery that was there. Why is it escaping my
mind? Not Paulson. When Paulson.
No.
It was before that.
Italian Swiss Colony.
Yes, a long time ago, yes.
Yes.
Italian Swiss Colony. And I think that was in the 50s and 60s, wasn't it?
And it was huge.
Yeah.
And people would drive up here, like you say, and they made this a vacation destination.
Mm-hmm.
So I think anything that helps with the whole idea of tourism in the
mm-hmm.
region. It lifts all the boats.
Yeah. Now, looking at it from another vantage point, there are people who criticize it severely and talk about monoculture and talk about what we're really doing is destroying Sonoma County and destroying the North Coast because we're covering every inch with grapes.
Mm.
What do you think about the balance of viticulture within the larger perspective of agriculture in Sonoma County?
Yeah, I don't agree with the position that the region's being destroyed. In fact, if anything, I would say it's being enhanced because we're not a monoculture at all.
No.
I mean, the diversity, if you look at the percentages of landscape dedicated to forest and open space, I mean, we live in an amazing place when it comes to open space.
Yeah. Ranch land, grazing, pasture land.
Yes. So grapes are but a part of a mm-hmm. very large picture. And if people want a perspective on monoculture, they should go to Chablis. I mean, it's...
That's a good point.
Yeah,
I've been there. Right through Champaign.
That's right. So if you're there, especially in the winter, because you know there aren't a lot of evergreen trees, so mm-hmm. it really is a very honestly, it's a great wine region. Both of them, they're both great regions, but they are bleak landscapes.
Yeah,
quite
I think
frankly.
That's a really really important point to make.
Yeah.
And one thing I always think about is as long as you're not planting houses and shopping centers, as long as it's agriculture and farmers. Will plant what makes money.
They have to, otherwise they go out of business. And so we see the price of apples rise and fall and the price of grapes rise and fall. There was some great ink about that today with everybody that was interviewed in the PD. It's a better time for growers right now after some bleak years because there's been some shortage of crop. And mm-hmm. as a consequence, they can be paid more, which helps them be more sustainable.
Yeah. And I think one thing people also in that area when they're complaining about grapes, I think that they don't have that broader perspective that grapes and the product and what grapes produce, wine, get a lot of ink because it's an end product that you advertise, whereas things like pasture land and all that sort of thing, you don't read so much about it. You don't see so much about it. And even apples, a lot of our apples go for processing.
Right.
And so you don't hear about it so much. So I always think as long as they're not covering it with cement, it's in agriculture and that's a great thing.
I agree with you.
Anyway, always have to address that when we're talking about wine, especially here on KRCB, because one thing about the KRCB audience that is absolutely great is I think they're very environmentally aware. They think about these things quite a bit, and that's a great thing. So back to the program. You've got something going on this week. There's a reception. What's it about? What's happening?
Oh, yes. So we've been spending some time with the group from the Bordeaux School
That's
of Management.
Right.
They've
That's
been
right.
studying with our professors for 2 weeks and also with our guests from the industry. And so we've had an opportunity to celebrate with them. And we're mm-hmm. taking them on the road. Tomorrow I'm on the road with them.
Where are they going?
We're going to go to Michael Mondavi's winery. Down in the Carneros. Then we're going to go up to visit with Treasury at the Behringer property and then Chateau Montelena.
Mm-hmm.
And then on Wednesday we were out with the vintners. Honor gave the group an overview of the Appalachians in Sonoma County so everybody mm-hmm. would have a sense of the place that they could take back home with them. And then we went out to Corbell to study sparkling production, and then we went over to Paul Hobbs to look at the wines that they're producing there and also the import and export from Argentina. So fascinating mm-hmm. days we spent with them.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
How do you choose what wineries you're going to introduce a group to?
Great question. Much of it is based on relationships mm-hmm. And wanting to be able to showcase people who've partnered with us and helped the program in various ways.
Mm-hmm.
And then being able to show the students a business element along with tasting the wines so that we could talk with the CFO at Paul Hobbs about, you know, how she makes decisions in the winery that have big financial implications.
Mm-hmm.
Talking with the winemaker at Corbell about how he maintains quality while producing lots of champagne. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And as a consequence, it takes a lot of responsibility, and to be able to communicate that to the students, how they make it happen, is really vital, and that they get to see it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not just in theory, but they really have it hands-on. And it kind of ties to one of the seminars we have coming up at the end of the month. We've partnered with VESTA. It's the Viticulture and Enology Science Technology Alliance that's funded by the National Science Foundation. And what we wanted to do is be able to offer more online courses in wine, and specifically in enology and vit, because a lot of our students won't be able to access them. We have a great partnership with the JC here in Santa Rosa, for example, but there are a lot of classes that are closed. They're hard to get into. So
yes.
we send the students there to study, uh-huh. you know, the tasting classes in enology and vit. But not everything's available to them on the time, given the budgets in California. So we found this new alliance with VESTA will make more classes available to people. And
mm-hmm.
so what we're doing is partnering them with them to do a workshop at the end of the month on sensory evaluation to look at the faults and other challenges that can exist in wine, you know, like oxidation and
your mood.
Yeah, that's right. Things that can influence your perception of
Absolutely.
Wine, right?
It all does.
Oh. And then some quantitative stuff so that people can do real difference testing and preference testing. And so, you know, you can check it out online. If you go and Google Sonoma State Wine Business, you can see everything we have going on and links to the various programs we have there.
Okay, we're going to take another musical break, and we'll be right back here on Mouthful.
I'll take the back roads home through the open countryside, letting things slip by in drawn out time. I'll take the long way home on the back roads of this life, taking time to see what goes by. Coming and going, there's no dividing line. What you're headed for, someone left behind. And the shortest road ain't always the best. Sometime let a back road take you home. And a back road is so easy, it just rambles on and on. Take it or leave it as it rolls along. Drifts through things it cannot change and doesn't even try. Wouldn't that be something for you and I? Coming and going, there's no dividing line. What you're heading for, someone left behind. And the shortest road ain't always the best. Sometime let a back road take you home. And any place you're bound, someday you're the one who chooses what you see along the way. And when the heartaches seem too much for you to bear, there's a back road winding everywhere. There's no dividing line. What you're heading for, someone left behind. And the shortest road ain't always the best. Sometime let a back road take you home. Sometime let a back road take you home.
Yeah, the music tonight we are featuring is, of course, Sonoma County's own Kate Wolfe. Though she wasn't born here, we get to claim her. She was here for so long. Her birthday's coming up. But also, when I do a show that is so specifically geographic, as we are tonight talking about Sonoma State University and their Wine Business Institute, I often focus on a local musician, and it just seemed fitting to do Kate. So that's why you're hearing her tonight. One thing I'm curious, I have a personal interest, not in that I benefit, but just I'm a writer, and I get press releases all the time. Some are really good. Then there's the others. And I've always thought that a component of any program along these lines should have a writing component about, you know, how do you write a press release? And all that, you know, how do you write those sorts of things that are going to, that you're going to use to reach out to your public?
That's right. And in fact, in some of the short classes, we offer that too for the professionals who
don't
have a chance to study in the master's program. So for example, coming up this semester, this is going to be really cool. Dan Berger is going to teach a wine marketing class in the spring. He's teaching wine marketing on April 13th. And then Elizabeth Slater teaches a marketing class that helps people develop their brand strategy and how to communicate that and how to write press releases. So these are both offered through our PD programs. And if you Google Sonoma State Wine Business, you'll come to our professional development section.
Oh, that's what PD stands for, is professional development.
Exactly.
Okay.
And yeah, check that out online, and you can see the details and dates when everything is.
Mm-hmm. And anyone can take these classes.
And anyone can take them. And that's an interesting point, that we do have people from outside the industry who are thinking of going in. They say, well, I really want to learn a little bit more about wine business. Should I do this or not? And it's a way for them to network with some people and make connections. And then also be able to sit next to somebody who's already in the business and ask them, you know, is this the right move for me?
Yeah, and then also develop some skills. Because I'll tell you, someone who's writing, and you know the way anything is right now, whether you're a blogger or whether you're writing for print, whatever, you need information. You need information. You need complete information. And it's nice to have it in one place. And when I get a press release from someone, whether it's through email or in print, it drives me nuts when maybe the date's there, but the time's not. Maybe the date and time are there, but the cost isn't. And then they think you have the address because they're, well, you know this winery. Of course you know the address.
Right.
But their address, their phone number, all that kind of stuff, it needs to be in one place.
That's right.
And I would say the vast majority of both people within the wine industry and within the food industry don't do it.
You're right. So,
yeah.
You know, with your passion for this subject, you ought to come in and teach a class on press releases.
I'd love to. I'm actually working on developing a class for the JC that includes that but is beyond it, and it's such a good idea. I'm not going to say more because I don't want anyone to steal it.
Okay.
But I think it's really important, and it's a component. I mean, and I don't blame the people who don't provide that information, because who teaches you?
Right.
You know, who teaches you? It's just like chefs who suddenly they have to write menus, and if they have never had occasion to do any more writing than the list for their purveyors, that sort of thing, they don't really know how to do it. So that's the sort of thing that just people do it by the seat of their pants, for the most part. So I think there's a hole that needs to be filled there, and I'm hoping I can be one of the people to help fill it. But that's another story.
Well, we'll do that together.
Okay, sounds like fun. You work for the Chronicle, not for the Chronicle. So if you work on the big taste in the Chronicle, North Coast, I don't know if I have the right name, but you've been doing that for a long time. You want to talk about that a little bit? Because the results just came out, right?
Right, and that is a judging that's done locally. So that was up in Cloverdale.
And when was it?
That was the first week of January, and it's a closed judging, just where you know everybody comes in and Michelle's been there with us.
I wouldn't have been able to do it this year because you did it while I was still. I think you did it on the 4th and 5th or the 3rd and 4th. I was still in New Orleans.
Oh, the weather must have been better.
the weather was better, definitely. But you taste hundreds of wines.
Right, and it's grown into the biggest competition of American wines in the world. So 5,005. Yeah, really huge now. 5,500 wines.
It's been about 4 years, I think, since I judged.
It's just really ramped up significantly. Mm-hmm. And we've had great press with the Chronicle. They really output the message and the winners afterwards and on SF Gate, you know, online. And then on winejudging.com, you can see all of the winners and get information about the public tasting that's coming up at Fort Mason. That's on February 18th. So if people do want to drive down to do that, don't just show up at the door. It does sell out every year. So.
Yeah, I'll put something about that in my column.
Oh, cool.
And definitely put something about that. But let's talk a little bit about that. It's at Fort Mason. Which buildings?
So it's just in the festival, the big one, and that's on the 18th. Mm-hmm. And
how many hours?
It's 3 hours. It's 2 to 5, and it's an opportunity for people to taste, you know, the big winners, mm-hmm. and meet with the wineries, right? Because that's always the fun part, is you get to meet people who work at the wineries and hear the story behind the wine as well as taste it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you go to that, right? You
probably, I do.
You're there. What sort of crowd does it draw? Does it draw the crowd of people who are really interested in doing that, in talking about it? Does it draw wine geeks, or does it draw the throw up on your shoes crowd?
No, we haven't had the latter.
Okay, good.
Yeah,
good.
We've been very lucky. We've had the former, as well as consumers who like wine,
yeah.
who you know, may not be deeply into it,
but who want to know more about it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's been really nice, and it draws quite a San Francisco crowd, as you would imagine,
sure.
because it is, you know, right there.
Mm-hmm.
And as we've been seeing through the years, the crowds and the consumers who attend, like we've seen up here, has been written about in the paper, that younger people are getting involved with wine. Over 21 people, but people are not waiting until they're 45 to start.
Mm-hmm.
Getting interested in wine. And that's really a great thing for the industry, because if you can embrace the younger generation, some of our faculty have written extensively about this, it's really going to change the fortunes of the wine industry.
That's an interesting topic. I know I started drinking wine fairly young. Of course, I moved here.
Hmm.
But even before I moved here, I sort of had an interest in it. And then when I was going to Sonoma State, we would go wine tasting.
Yes.
We would go always to Buena Vista.
Hmm.
Buena Vista was the best wine tasting experience in Sonoma County at that time, partly because it was in the old cave, which I don't know if the cave has been reopened. I know they had to do some earthquake retrofitting for quite a while, but it may have opened again. But it was, you know, the original caves, and there was this guy, he was in his 40s or 50s, and I think he was also an actor, and he was drop dead hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
So we would go there sometimes, we'd have a picnic outside, and we'd go tasting, and we would learn about wine just because this guy was so much fun to listen to. But there were other wineries, and we'd drive around, but we definitely, it wasn't what our peers were doing, and it wasn't that we were special. It was that if you were young, if you were in your 20s, you were going into a world that was largely occupied by older people.
Right.
And that seems to have continued for a pretty long time.
Mm-hmm.
And they've tried a lot of gimmicks
mm-hmm.
to pull in younger people.
Mm-hmm.
And there were the wine brats for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
We've had the wine brats on.
Right.
There have been all kinds of things. Have any of those things really taken off, do you think?
I think what's taking off now is the notion and the understanding that young people don't want to be talked down to, and they want to be communicated with in a way that's more collegial about wine, and then the influencing goes out in circles mm-hmm. from their peer groups to each other.
Yeah. You don't have to dumb it down. You don't have to yuck it up.
That's
you
right.
don't have to put it into some stupid costume to reach. Just talk to them.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds good. What sort of attendance do you have in the program?
Oh, so in the bachelor's degree program, we have 125 people running through.
Really?
Yeah.
That's
and
big.
It seems big. It is, yes. And then on the master's side, there are 32 students
mm-hmm.
going through, working on their wine MBA. And in the professional development classes, we'll have about 250 people come to each semester.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them will just take one class. Some
sure.
will take more.
Uh-huh. Yeah. What do the professional development classes cost?
So the four-hour classes are $150 each.
Mm-hmm.
The we have a longer program in wine business management that's 4 weeks long. That intro course is $590. And then we have a really big course coming up the beginning of February, and that's it's called Wine Entrepreneurship. And that's a class that is also through the professional development program, where anyone can take the class. They don't have to be already registered, though we will have master's degree students in it. And what's great there is people learn how to develop a brand. If, let's say you have the dream, Michelle. You want to build a winery someday.
So you would build your brand within the class.
Exactly. So you would gain the tools to be able to write a business plan, something that you could actually go out and present. And In the past, I've taught the class, and I thoroughly loved it. We bring in a lot of experts from the industry to work with the students. But this time, we've taken it to a whole new level. Anisha Fritz, who's a proprietor out at Linmar, mm-hmm. and, you know, we were talking. They make gorgeous Pinot and Chardonnay. Well, she's going to lead the class for us. And in her previous life, before she ever came to wine, she used to teach strategy in business. She has a PhD. So she's really on the ball in terms of understanding the theory. And then the practical application at Linmar is amazing because they've built a luxury brand there. And for the students to be able to work directly with her, I think is an awesome opportunity. So that's a more expensive class. It's $750, mm-hmm. but it's 10 weeks, it's 30 hours. Uh-huh. And, I mean, you get to talk with somebody who has made a success, right? So I think it more than pays for itself.
While you were teaching, did you notice any particular trends? What was popular that people taking the class wanted to do? I mean, did they all want to make drop-dead cabs? Mm. Were they all just suddenly going to make, you know, the perfect Pinot Noir or what?
So quite a variety, I have to tell you. We had people who would come up from San Francisco who had amazing business backgrounds who just wanted to learn how they could apply that into the wine business. And mm-hmm. so taking a class that works with a business plan was a perfect opportunity for them. We had people, Emilio Castelli, I would say, he wants to grow Nebbiolo in the Russian River. And that's a hard one to do, right? And that's a hard message to communicate. So how do you do that? And how do you do it effectively? We had people that David Canzona with Canzona Vineyards making luxury Cabernet down in Sonoma Valley. Gary Kimmel transitioning from grower to vintner up in Lake County. Matt Hughes came down from Six Sigma in Lake County to gain a deeper understanding of the business side. Mm-hmm. He's a winemaker.
Six Sigma. They've got a very good reputation.
Oh, awesome wines.
Yeah.
And so great business background with the ownership there. They you know, Kai was in worked for GE Capital for years, and he's on our board. But, you know, there the winemaker says, hey, I want to learn the language of how does the business run. And mm-hmm. it really helps inform his decisions. And then we'd have people who wanted to go out on their own. They've been assistant winemakers for a long time, but they'd like to develop their brand. Mm-hmm. And so that's an opportunity for them to, you know, put the pen to paper and learn the quantitative skills to be able to develop their own brand without losing their shirt.
Mm-hmm. Would you call the program very much left brain? I think that's the right way to put it. Right brain is the creative inspiration side. Left brain is the nuts and bolts.
Mm.
So is this something where you get that inspiration of what you want to do, you get the creative juice, and then in your program, you learn the nuts and bolts, and not just the nuts and bolts, but, you know, the beams, all the concrete, everything to actually make that work.
That's a great metaphor to describe it. Yes, you take your inspiration and then come to class and learn how to really create it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, I think because that's really necessary, and I think that a lot of people fail in bridging those two things. I mean, how many of us have had fabulous ideas that then we just don't know how to, you know, make them, you know, realize them because of that part.
That's right. In the wine business, you can be tripped up in many on many places along the road. I mean, mm-hmm. it's a long time horizon before you bring your money back after making those big investments. It's a legal quagmire. Every time you turn around, you think you have everything done correctly. There's some other law you didn't think about.
Oh, yeah. The legal stuff is phenomenal. I used to – one day I watched Gary Farrell when he was still the winemaker for Davis Bynum, but was also had his label for quite a long time and was using the same crush pad. And just the amount of paperwork he had to do for using the crush pad for two labels was astonishing.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it was really I learned a lot just watching him that one day juggling those two things. It was really something.
Right. So this is this is what I think really bears out the metaphor you make, is the idea that you can have inspiration, but you really know how you need to learn the nuts and bolts, all the steps along the way, so you don't trip up, because there is a lot of money at risk whenever you decide to go into the wine business,
mm-hmm.
either your own money or that of your friends, family, and partners.
Sure. Yeah. Now, do you see a lot of garage winemakers coming through?
Yes, we do.
And are they able to make that transition? I mean, we've got some famous ones who made the transition. William Selyem, for example.
Yes, and those are the stories that really make the region, don't they? because people love to see that kind of success of somebody mm-hmm. starting out with their own idea, whether it's HP in a garage in Palo Alto or a winemaker up here.
Yeah.
And we have one that's actually coming out of our program right now. So Jacob Avery, he works in the tasting room up at Pride, and you know Pride Mountain Vineyards up mm-hmm. right there straddling Spring Mountain between Sonoma and Napa on both sides. So he works there, but he took the entrepreneurship class. He's in the wine MBA program. He's going full tilt on wine education, and he's developing his own brand, and that's going to launch in the, well, it's already launching, what am I saying, because he's going to pour his wines at Zap at the big tasting down at Fort Mason. No, not at Fort Mason. They moved to the concourse this year. But he's going to pour his brand, and I thought, you know, this is the fruition to all the hard work. He's done the study, and now he's actually launching his garage brand. Small quantities to start, but that's prudent. Until
sure,
he really
that's a
rolls
good way
it
to
out.
Go. Yes. Yeah, that's a good way to go. Have you had his one?
No, I haven't yet. I'm looking forward to trying it at the end of the month.
We've got only about 10 minutes left. We'll probably hear one more song from Kate. But before we do that, I'm wondering if I could get you to talk personally a little bit.
Oh, boy.
I would just want to know some of the wines you really love. What do you, you know, after a long day of work or a nice dinner or whatever, what do you like to drink?
Oh, you know, Linda and I really enjoy Sauvignon Blanc, so we like the crisp acidity of Sauvignon.
Right on. It's my nightly wine these days.
I love Riesling with crab. You know, I've tasted so many different wines looking for the right thing to put with fresh crab and with crab cakes. And there's something about the acidity, like we talked about with the refreshing character of Sauvignon, but then also the kiss of some residual sugar in that can help round it out, work with some of that natural saltiness and natural sweetness in crab. So that's a real delight. I made a habit about 10 years ago of starting to put away wine. Well, no, maybe 14 years ago. And I, you know, this is kind of, okay, you want personal story?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so we moved into the new house where we moved out in the West County. And
whereabouts in West County?
We're out in Hessel, actually.
Oh, okay.
Out on Volkerts Road. And the people were leaving, and really nice people that owned the house before, and they said, well, we have this old chest freezer, you know, you want us to get rid of it? And he said, no, I'll keep it. So what I did is what did I fit in there? 12 cases of wine, turned it off, never turned it on, wrapped it all up in insulation, put my crusher destemmer on top of it, so it was really hard to get into, and just forgot about all the wine.
Oh,
and
wow.
That's, you know, and now we just opened it. It's like a time capsule.
Yeah, what's in there?
Oh, there's some beautiful wines. We had a 97 Malbec from Clos du Bois last night, and this is what we've been doing. We've just been going back through the late 90s and 2000 and tasting wines that have just been so nice.
I've still got a very few early to mid-90s. That I got to start having some dinner parties so I can drink them. I have a 95, 94, 95. Oh, come on, Michelle. I'll think of it in just a second. One of my favorite producers, and I'm going blank. Dehlinger.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I have some beautiful Dehlingers. I still have one bottle of a beautiful vintage of B.R. Cohn Pinot Noir. Mm. And then a couple older Gary Farrells before he moved to the new winery, which he's since sold. And I have you tried Elysian yet?
No.
Now, Elysian, you know, is Gary Farrell's new label. Yeah. And they were pouring this year. His wife was pouring this year at the big tasting in the summer. And, oh,
nice.
They're as breathtaking as they ever were. Just that delicate, delicate touch with all of those top notes that I call pinescence, because there's nothing else has them except Pinot Noir. There's no word has been invented yet to describe that. So they're very beautiful.
Yes.
So what about with oysters?
Oh, boy. Well, you know, from my training back in the old days where I was a Francophile before I moved to California.
Oh, where were you living then?
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Oh.
So, yeah, it was Chablis and you know, Champagne.
Mm-hmm.
But I stay with that here with high-acid white wines. I love that.
Have you ever been involved with the oyster wine tasting?
No.
Do you know about it?
Boy, get me in on that.
I will. I will connect you by email. John Rowley, who does PR, and I know does PR for Taylor Shellfish up in the Seattle area. He has organized this now, and it's at least 10 years, but I think it's more than 10 years. And I believe they have tastings let's see, New York, Seattle, New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco. There may now be a fifth location, but they start out in Seattle, and it's I think it's just wines from this coast. I think it's California, Washington, and Oregon. I don't think there's anything else. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's it. And they aren't adding sparkling wines to them right now. They did that for a while, but they've separated that out. They're not doing them. So it's white. I mean, it's always white wines. I don't think there's a rule, but it is. And they are tasted with an oyster. Each time that the wine is tasted in all these different locations, it's tasted with an oyster. Oh, and nice. It's not judged on its own merit, as, right. you know, a lot of, say, the one that you work on does. It's judged for its compatibility with the oyster and its ability to enhance the oyster, the flavor of the oyster.
Nice.
And so you sit down, and last April, the tasting is in April in San Francisco, we did it at the Clift House. And so we're there on the bottom floor of the Clift House, surrounded by these windows and the crashing surf, and they've separated the tables so that each of us is at our own table now, so we can't possibly talk and start, you know, sharing information. And there are waiters, and every time your platter of oysters is done, they bring you another platter of oysters.
Heaven.
And I think it was 26 wines is what were in, and that was the final tasting. And then all of the results are compiled, and it's not rated. They release the 10 oyster wines. They can be in, I think they list them in alphabetical order. It's not like the best, but 10. And then they use that information to get on menus of restaurants that serve wines.
Nice.
And then last Saturday night? I think, yes, last Saturday night they have this event. You should think about going to this event. I'm thinking about going to. It's called the Walrus and the Carpenter. Mm. And it takes place at Taylor Shellfish at night. This was at night because it was at low tide. And you get on a bus, and they take, and so you have to dress warmly and in boots and all this sort of things. And then they take you there, and it's low tide, and you can go and with a shucker, and you can shuck your own oysters if you want, or you can just move from table to table tasting all of the different varieties of oysters
that
Taylor does, including Olympias. And where can you taste Olympias? I mean, Olympias are one of the hardest oysters to get. They're no longer, from what I hear, they're no longer in danger of going extinct as far as commercial production goes. There was some threat of that for a while. But, you know, they're not much bigger than a nickel. It takes, I think you get 25 to 30 in a quarter cup. I mean, they're very tiny, and they're so good. So anyway, you eat oysters for 2 or 3 hours, I think it is, maybe even longer, and then you're drinking wines the whole time. And then when you get on the bus to go to be returned to your starting point, you get a big bowl of oyster chowder. And it always sells out. And then I think once John recovers from that, he starts putting together the New Year's oyster wine tasting. And we did a tasting here on Mouthful once, 2 years ago. And what he did was he shipped down in a cooler. He shipped, I think, 6 dozen oysters and 7 of the winning wines. And then he was at home, and he was shucking oysters, and I was shucking, or my engineer was shucking oysters, and we tasted our way through all the wines with the oysters on the air, and it was really fun.
Nice.
So maybe I'll invite you to do that one. We're going to try to do it again this year.
Please do.
But yeah, that's definitely a tasting you should know about. So let's sum up, now that I've just, you know, taken up the last 5 minutes, but I knew you would want to know about that. Let's sum up how people can get a hold of information about the Wine Business Institute at Sonoma State. Certainly online. How's your website?
Yes. So just Google Sonoma State Wine Business, and that'll bring you to our homepage for the Wine Business Institute. And you can see links to all of our programs there, both those where you would matriculate and then apply, like a master's or a bachelor's, but also the professional development classes, everything from the 4-hour seminars to, you know, 10 weeks with Anisha Fritz studying wine entrepreneurship.
And those are in the extended ed, and I assume there'd be a link to the extended ed classes.
Exactly.
And those are great classes, so don't be intimidated because it's called a university.
No.
It is also there for the community, and it is a wonderful place. If people wanted to talk to you directly, how do you like to be contacted, Ray?
Well,
email?
No, give me a phone call. Oh. I'm kind of an old-fashioned guy. So 707-664- 6643071.
That's 6643071. Ray Johnson, the director of the Wine Business Institute, which is part of the School of Business and Economics at Sonoma State University. Any upcoming events that the public is going to be invited to? And if not, that's okay.
Oh, the next one won't be, the big public event will be out in the fall. So
I'll let you know when that comes.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Okay, that's another episode of Mouthful. Next week, we are going to be talking about wineries in the North Bay that have charging stations for your electric car. Mouthful speeds on into the future. So have a great week. Take care of yourself. Take care of each other. Enjoy a nice glass of wine and meet me back here next week at 7 for another episode of the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour, Mouthful.
To the Lord, let praises be. It's time for dinner now, let's go eat. We've got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher said. To the Lord, let praise be.
Mouthful is produced by Michelle Anna Jordan. It's engineered by Lawrence Alberti and Eric Black. For more information about Mouthful, email to catsmilk@sonic.net. That's catsmilk@sonic.net. You can also go to krcb.org and download podcasts of Mouthful, as well as from iTunes.
And the moral of this story, children, it is plain but true. God knows if a preacher preaches long enough, even he'll get hungry too, and he'll sing.
To the Lord, let praises be. It's time for dinner now, let's go. We got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher says. To the Lord, let praises be. It's time for dinner now, let's go. We got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher says. Time for dinner now, let's go. We got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher says.
To the Lord, let praise be.
Let it be.
It's time for dinner now, let's go.
We got some beans
and good cornbread.
Listen
to what the preacher says.
To the Lord, praise be.